Good morning and welcome to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg and we are live 1/2 hour each weekday morning in order to take your calls. If you have questions about the Bible, about the Christian faith, or about your own Christian life, your own Christian walk, maybe your spiritual journey if you're not even a Christian yet, and you would like to ask questions that relate to Christianity or other spiritual topics, feel free to call me. We can talk about them here. If you have heard the program before, or if in the course of this program, if you hear something from this host that you don't think is correct and you'd like to bring balance or correction, feel free to call. The number is the same. In any case, it's 1-800-227-5278. That's 1-800-227-5278. And we will talk to you as soon as we can. You'll need to call soon, though, because the program is only a half hour long, and it does go by very fast. Let's talk to Mike from San Diego, first of all, today. Mike, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Steve. Hey, I was one of your meetings in Temecula at Dana's place.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I got a chance to meet you up there. And, my question for you is, Steve, I don't think I asked you this yet. When a Christian dies now, before the resurrection at the end, in the intermediate heaven, do we mm-hmm. have a spiritual, non-corporeal body, or would we have some kind of a physical-type body? What do you think?
Well, I don't think we have a direct answer from Scripture in that. I can tell you what my impressions are from what I read, but they're not really authoritative. My impression is that heaven is essentially a place of non-corporeal beings. For example, we know that God and the angels live in heaven. Well, we're told by Jesus in John 4 that God is a spirit. And, of course, Jesus said in Luke 24 that a spirit does not have flesh and bones as you see me have. Now, that's not exactly the same thing as saying a spirit has no body of any kind. Presumably, a spirit could have a body that doesn't have flesh and bones, but what kind it would be, we don't know. My impression, though, is that he's saying a spirit is non-corporeal. A spirit is not physical. And we know the angels also are said to be spirits. And, you know, Hebrews 1:14 says the angels are ministering spirits. So I'm thinking that life in heaven is for non-corporeal beings.
Okay. The reason I would even think it might be tangible is simply because when Jesus ascended into heaven, he ascended in his resurrection body. And therefore, if he would be if he's in heaven right now with a physical type body, that's one thing I think about sometimes. If he has a physical
body, and rightly so.
Right.
Rightly so. Yeah. If his body is physical now in heaven, then arguably, then heaven can accommodate physical beings. I have a couple of thoughts about that. One is that although Jesus' physical body was raised from the dead, it seemed to be a supernatural body that was capable of materializing and dematerializing at different times. I mean, I believe it was his same body that had been now glorified. But the nature of a glorified body is never explained to us fully. And I think a glorified body may very well, at least Jesus' glorified body apparently, was able to disappear and to reappear. I think that it's possible that in his resurrected body, he can materialize and dematerialize. And perhaps in our resurrection bodies, we will be able to do that too. But, of course, you're asking about before that, before the resurrection. Yeah, that'd be interesting. When I was a little kid, I always wished I could do that. But, you know, you're wondering about prior to the resurrection. You know, I believe that we don't receive our resurrection bodies until the end of the world. So when we die, I believe that our spirits are probably disembodied in heaven until the resurrection.
Okay, hey, well, thanks, Steve. I appreciate it, and I look forward to seeing you up in Temecula, I think, a couple weeks from today.
Yeah, on the 20th, I'll be in Temecula again.
Right. Okay, well, I appreciate it, and I look forward to seeing you. Thank you.
I look forward to seeing you, too. God bless you.
All right. Bye.
Bye now. And that's, that's an opportunity for me to give a shameless plug for the next time I will be speaking in Temecula in Southern California. It's in Riverside County, if you don't know where Temecula is. About once a month I try to speak in Temecula. We have a pretty reasonable, good-sized group that comes out, and we've been meeting in a home, but this time, which is going to be Sunday the 20th of November, it's going to be a Sunday night, We're going to be meeting in a little community center. Excuse me. We think it will accommodate somewhat more than the home that we've been meeting in does, and we've been a little bit overcrowded. I'm going to be speaking on the 20th of November on the subject of my book, Revelation, Four Views, A Parallel Commentary. You may know about that book, or you may not, but it is a book where I compare the four different approaches to Revelation and show their pros and cons without really supporting any one of them necessarily. The idea is to let Christians know what the options are. So my book was published back in 1997, still available, but I'm going to be speaking on the four views of Revelation in Temecula on Sunday night, November 20th. There's information about that at our website, which is thenarrowpath.com. At thenarrowpath.com. By the way, I'm going to give away 10 copies of my book. And the book's it retails for over $30 from the bookstores. But I'm going to give away 10 copies just from a random drawing of those who come. So we'd love to see you. There's, of course, no cost to be there. And there's a potluck beforehand. So just check it out at the website, thenarrowpath.com. You want to check the link that says announcements for that. Okay, we're going to talk to Angela next from Pasadena, California. Angela, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Was hoping that you could explain a couple being equally yoked.
Well, when Paul talks about...
When
Paul says, do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers, which is in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, he's talking about a believer being bound into a relationship, a binding relationship, with an unbeliever. Now, he doesn't specifically mention marriage, though marriage is certainly a binding relationship, so many times Christians apply this to marriage, and I think rightly so. I think possibly a business partnership or some other kind of binding relationship could also be figuratively referred to as being yoked together with somebody. Of course, the literal meaning of a yoke is a wooden bar that was put over the head of a couple of animals, oxen or donkeys or something, or horses to pull a plow or to pull a cart. It's a steering device, but it binds the two animals together to work together. And it obviously limits the faster animal from being able to go any faster than the slower animal. They have to work together, and therefore you don't want animals yoked unequally. In fact, in the Old Testament, there's a law in Deuteronomy that says you shall not plow with an ox and an ass together. That is, you shouldn't put a yoke over two different kinds of animals, an ox and an ass. Probably practical reasons alone would dictate the wisdom of that. But it's also got symbolic value because the donkey is an unclean animal in the Jewish law, where an ox is a clean animal. And the idea is you don't take that which is clean and unclean and bind them together. And that's the thought that Paul has in mind in 2 Corinthians 6 when he says, do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. It's like the believer is clean, like a clean animal, and should not be yoked together with an unclean animal that's unacceptable to God. And what does that mean? I think it means that, when we're applying to a couple, a married couple, that... a Christian should not marry a non-Christian. Beyond that, there's even more to consider because there might be other areas of incompatibility even among two Christians. That is, some Christians may be more, zealous to pursue God, to forsake everything and follow God in a certain way than another Christian is. And therefore, it's a mistake to bind two people together who are not on the same page in terms of important things of life, and especially not on the same page about Jesus and whether they're followers of Jesus. Now, of course, once people are married, they are bound together, and that's the whole point. Don't get bound together like that because you are bound together, and it's not desirable. If a Christian is married to a non-Christian, they should not divorce. It's unfortunate that they have been bound to a non-Christian, but they should make the best of it. As Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7, that the Christian should not leave the non-Christian, but should hope to win the non-Christian over. So, even though it's not a good thing to have Christian married to a non-Christian, apparently it's a worse thing for a Christian to divorce their spouse, even if they're non-Christian. But the instructions would be useful to anyone who's considering marriage, of course, or business partnerships, or anything else in which a Christian might find themselves bound by the behavior, bound to conform somewhat by the behavior of a person in a certain kind of situation, and that person's not a Christian. Because, of course, the Christian wants to serve God and the other person doesn't. They're going to be pulling two different directions, not the same direction.
Right, right. Thank you very much. You gave me a lot of useful information there. I really appreciate it.
Okay, Angela, thanks for your call.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Good talking to you. Bye now. Okay, we'll talk next to Dave from La Habra. If you'd like to be on the program, we have a line open for you. You can get on right now at 1-800-227-5278. That's 1-800-227-5278. And Dave, welcome to the Narrow Path. Good to hear from you.
Steve, I was looking for the verse where Damascus will become a ruinous heap forever. And I know the Isaiah 17:1 verse.
Uh-huh.
I thought there was another verse, and I was going through the Minor Prophets and spent like 2 hours trying to find that verse.
Yeah. Do you have a concordance?
No, unfortunately.
Oh, you don't have a concordance? Uh-huh. Okay. Do you have a computer and an internet?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, you're very limited in your resources then.
Yeah.
The truth is, I do have a concordance and the internet, but I don't have the ability to look them up while I'm on the air.
Maybe
there are
tomorrow?
There are a number of prophets that speak about the judgment that would come upon various nations surrounding Israel. Isaiah does, as you pointed out. Jeremiah does, and Ezekiel does. All three of these prophets have sections of their books that are given over to, you know, prophecies about the doom of Egypt and Edom and Syria, which would be Damascus, and Philistia and Babylon and so forth. So I don't remember which of them might have the specific reference you're referring to. I think you're correct that there is one of the prophecies that mentions that it'll be perpetual desolations. I'd have to look it up, and I can't do that while I'm on the air.
Well, I'll be listening tomorrow.
Okay, I'll see if I can find it.
Thanks.
But you know, you ought to break down by a concordance.
Okay. Bye.
They're not expensive. Okay.
Bye.
God bless you. Bye now. They're not expensive, but it's even less expensive to call me on a 800 number. So, but I don't have the Bible memorized, and I don't have time really to look things up here. If I know the answer, I'll give it to you. If I don't, I'll have to look it up some other time. So, anyway, feel free to call anyway. If I don't know the answer, I'm not going to blame you for asking. As long as you don't blame me for not knowing the answer. That's just the nature of humans lacking omniscience. All right, we're going to talk next to Lee from Poway, California. Lee, welcome to the Narrow Path. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Hello. I'm so happy to have found your program.
I'm glad you found it, too.
Actually, about 3 to 4 weeks ago, I heard you speaking to someone about whether the boy prophet, the Shakarian, Demas Shakarian, the happiest people on earth, Armenian, and whether anyone had unwrapped the final prophecy.
Wow, I don't remember that coming up recently, but I've always been curious about that.
I have too, and I've read his book. I mean, it takes somebody a little older, like at least I'm older, and I read his book a while back, and I've read it two or three times since, and been always wondered if in the Armenian church that came over, and you know, Demas, of course, was that wonderful. He actually started the men's, what am I trying to say? He was the one.
Christian businessman. Yeah, Full Gospel Christian Businessman Fellowship. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Full Gospel Businessman. He was the beginning on that. And I knew that book told about the boy prophet way back in the early 1900s or even 1890s.
I think it was the 1890s, yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he said in the latter days, someone would be found that could open that final prophecy, and that's what I wondered if they found him yet.
Right. So, I have not heard, and I would certainly like to. Most of the Armenians uh-huh. who left Armenia at that time live in the Los Angeles area, and there's a lot of Armenian
yes.
churches there.
Yes.
You might be able
I think
to...
Downey was where he had his great, you know, it was at one time the largest milk-producing dairy in the world, Demas and his father. And it's just been
Lee, I don't know the answer to the question. I was kind of hoping when you brought up that you had the answer for me.
I would do anything. It may be someone's listening now that is still in that fellowship, the Armenian fellowship.
Okay.
Could answer whether or not this prophecy has been unwrapped yet. But it's quite exciting.
Okay, we'll leave that question on the table. Maybe someone knows the answer.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much, Lee.
By now.
I do not. Okay. God bless. Bye now. If you don't know what she's talking about, the people of Armenia were a Christian nation. And I don't know the year that it occurred, but I think early in the 20th century, they were overrun by Turkey, and the Turkish people slaughtered a great number of Armenian people, pretty much all of them that they could find. It was really a bloody kind of invasion. Now, according to Demas Shakarian, who is an Armenian Christian who came over to this country in the early part of the 20th century, I believe, he said that in the late 1800s, the Armenian people were spoken to by an 11-year-old boy who was a prophet. He had a prophetic vision. And in that vision, he saw a map and words, but he was illiterate. He didn't know how to read them. So he copied them down. And the map was a map of America, apparently. And the words, I don't remember the exact business, but basically it was that the Christians in Armenia needed to flee from their homeland to this country that he had seen, which was America. And as I understand it, a very sizable percentage of the Armenian population actually did that, and they did flee to America. And in doing so, they escaped the horrible, horrible slaughter that came upon the Armenian people later on. But there was another prophecy that was apparently sealed. And from what I've heard, it's still in the possession of the Armenian churches. I don't know where. And that it contains another prophecy that would not be opened until the right person would come to do it, is what I heard. And I think that prophecy was supposed to tell them where they're going to have to flee when they have to leave America. Now, I'm not 100% sure about that. But Lee was wondering about that. She was wondering if anyone had come along to open that prophecy. My guess is if they had, the Armenian Christians wouldn't be in Los Angeles anymore. They'd be fled to someplace else. I'm not sure about that, though. So if there's any Armenian Christians listening who know something about that, that's what Lee was curious about. And of course, many of us would be curious about that, so be glad to hear from anyone who knows more. Let's talk to John from Torrance, California next. John, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hi. How are you this morning?
Fine, thank you.
Hello? Okay, yeah, I'm a first-time
yes.
caller. I've been listening to your program for a while. I have a question regarding Exodus chapter 3, verse 2. Just would like to know, it mentions and the angel of the Lord appeared unto him being Moses, in a flame of fire out of the midst of the burning bush. My question
yes.
to you is, who do you believe the angel of the Lord in the burning bush to be?
Well, the same being that appeared to him there is called Yahweh in verse 7. And he's called the angel of Yahweh in verse 2. But throughout the rest of the dialogue, it says that he's called Yahweh himself. Now, this has led most Christians to believe that the angel of Yahweh in the Old Testament is an appearance of God, and some would say even an appearance of Christ prior to the incarnation, you know, because we do believe that Jesus was God before he was on earth as a man, and therefore many believe that the angel of the Lord in this passage and in many Old Testament passages is actually a reference to Christ prior to his birth in Bethlehem appearing to somebody, in this case Moses, and speaking, so that he's alternatively referred to as the angel of the Lord or simply as Yahweh. So I think what we can say at the very least is the angel of the Lord is identified here with Yahweh himself. Whether he is the what we would call the second person of the Trinity or not is not really stated.
So are you actually saying that the second person of the Trinity, Christ, became an angel in this apparent here in the burning bush?
Well, he didn't become what we call an angel. The word angel in the Hebrew just means a messenger. And any messenger, regardless of their status, is called by the same word. Even a human messenger can be called by the same word. So, and Jesus is called by that word. And for example, in Malachi chapter 3, Jesus is called the messenger of the covenant. In the Hebrew, it's the same word, angel of the covenant. It's referring to Jesus in Malachi 3. So Jesus could be called the angel of the Lord. If we understand the word angel doesn't mean a particular created class of beings as we normally think of it, but rather you could easily translate the messenger of the Lord. And in this case, the messenger is the Lord himself in a form which theologians would call a theophany. The word theophany, of course, is a Greek term not found in Scripture, but theologians use it. Theos means God, and phaneo means appearance. So theophaneo or theophany means an appearance of God. And in the Old Testament, there are a number of things that are referred to as theophanies, appearances of God. The pillar of cloud that led the children of Israel is a theophany. The burning bush, the fire in the bush, apparently, the messenger in the bush is a theophany. Apparently, the man who wrestled with Jacob all night was a theophany. So I would take these as instances of God taking on a visible, tangible form in order to reveal himself to certain persons. And whether it is actually Christ, the second person of the Godhead or not, I don't know if we could really say. But it's not impossible.
Yeah. Well, can I just ask just a follow-up question? In Hebrews chapter 3, verse 16, when it speaks about Christ, when it says in verse 16, "For verily he took not on him the nature of angels, but he took on him the seed of Abraham," that suggests to me that the second person of the Trinity does not appear in that form as far as a messenger or an angel. Can you reconcile that for me?
The writer of Hebrews is talking about in the incarnation of Christ. He's saying that when Christ came among us, he didn't come as an angel, he came as a human of the seed of Abraham. He's obviously referring to the birth of Jesus in history in the fullness of times when God sent forth his son born of a woman. He didn't have him born as an angel, but as a man from the seed of Abraham. This is not telling us whether Christ as a messenger might have been sent to people previous to his incarnation. In this case, you see, in Hebrews chapter 3, it's, in fact, chapters 1 and 2 of Hebrews, also the whole section of Hebrews is contrasting Jesus with angels. But the angels that it's contrasting with are the created the servants. It says so in Hebrews 1:14. Speaking of angels, it says, "Are they not all ministering spirits?" Means serving. Ministering means serving. He's talking about angels that are servants in God's household, serving spirits who sent forth to minister to those who are the heirs of salvation. So the writer of Hebrews has a particular thing in mind when he says angels. He's talking about specifically these servant spirits that are sent forth like Gabriel and other angels like that. And he's saying Jesus wasn't one of those. And the Old Testament, if Jesus is referred to as the angel of Yahweh, it'd be better to translate the messenger of Yahweh, because that's the word angel means messenger. It doesn't always mean these servant spirits. The word angel is much more generic for any kind of messenger.
Okay,
so it could easily be said that Jesus is not an angel of the type of that Gabriel is, but he is nonetheless a messenger of another sort. And therefore, it's not impossible for him to be referred to as the messenger of the Lord in the Old Testament and yet be contrasted from a certain type of angels in the New Testament.
Okay, thank you very much. That's very helpful. Thank you very much.
I appreciate your call, John. Thank you for calling.
All right.
God bless you. Bye now.
God bless you.
You've been listening to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. If you've just stumbled across the program and never heard it before, I want you to make a note of the fact that you can catch it every weekday at this time. It's just a half hour in the mornings. We have a second daily live program in the afternoons that's an hour. Unfortunately, the same radio stations that carry the morning show do not carry the afternoon show. These are on different radio areas. So you can catch both shows, either of them, on the internet from our website. They are streamed live, and they're also archived there, so you can listen to past shows there as well. The website is thenarrowpath.com. And if you'd like to, if you like this program and wish it was longer than a half hour, one solution would be to also listen to the hour program in the afternoon, which you can do from the website. Another would be to pray that we get a longer program even on these stations that you're listening to, but that's very expensive. We're listeners supported, and we pay for the radio time. We pay a lot of money every month to stay on the radio. And we don't have any sponsors. You notice we didn't have any commercial breaks. We didn't try to sell you anything. We don't have anything to sell. Even at our website, you'll find nothing for sale. We don't have a bookstore or anything like that. Even my book that I mentioned, we won't sell it. If you want to buy my book, you have to go to another bookstore because I won't sell my book. I won't sell anything. This is a ministry, not a business, and we trust God to keep it going. We are offering our services and all that we have to offer for free. And we trust that the Lord will provide for us to continue paying the airtime, for us to stay on the radio. You should know that, especially if you're listening on a California station right now, our ability to stay on long-term is challenged financially. And if you'd like to help us stay on the air, you may want to write to us at The Narrow Path. That's The Narrow Path, P.O. Box 3633, Santa Cruz, California, 95063. That's The Narrow Path, P.O. Box 3633, Santa Cruz, California, 95063. You can also find that address at our website or even donate from there using the PayPal link. If you don't want to donate, feel free to go to the website anyway. There's lots of free resources to you, and you certainly don't have to donate to use them. The website is thenarrowpath.com, and we hope you'll go there and use those resources which are free to you. That's thenarrowpath.com. Thanks for joining us. Tune in again tomorrow. We can continue our discussion then. God bless you. Bye now.